Hello. Okay, it's recording. Manalovin energy. Stop putting it on the mic.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable member. For the sake of time, the presentation was structured in such a way that I will make the entire presentation rather than for the different program managers to make their own separate presentation. But what they will then do is to assist in the answering of questions that the honorable members may at a later stage like to pose. Before I start on my presentation, Mr. Chairperson, I would like to extend the Minister's apologies, who unfortunately is currently in New York attending the 15th session of the UN Commission on Sustainable Development. As indicated on the slide, the presentation for today will include an overview of the funding strategic plan and discussions on energy, mine health, and safety and corporate services. Tomorrow, our discussion will be on mineral regulation, mineral policy, and promotion, followed by a briefing on the amendment of the MPRDA. The DMP team is just indicated on the screen. Chairperson, 2 years ago, I presented to this committee the department's change strategy focus, where I indicated that we will be moving away from focusing on policy development to ensuring the implementation of our policies. As a result, the last 2 years have seen the development of various computerized and non-computerized implementation systems, processes, and procedures. The time has now come, Mr. Chairperson, for us to strengthen our capacity to monitor the impact of our policies on the lives of beneficiaries, monitoring the effectiveness of our transformation processes, monitoring how departments together with other government structures, like our state-owned enterprises, are participating in the implementation of government policy. When you say that, Chairperson, that this year we'll be focusing on monitoring, it doesn't mean that we will now stop implementing, because that's our core function. The implementation of government policies is our core function. We'll continue to do that. Nor does it then mean, Chairperson, that we will now cease to continuously review our policy, because the policy formulation is an ever continuing process. As we implement the policy, we concomitantly refine the contents of the policy, because it is in the implementation that we can see how appropriate the policies that we have developed are. And of course, the process of legislation will continue concomitant with the process of monitoring. Honorable members, in February this year, the department held its annual strategic planning session where we reviewed our vision, mission, and strategic objectives. We further reviewed the department's 2006-2007 program the performance against the fight. During the same session, the minister gave our health strategic direction to the department. The minister's statement formed the basis and the approach to our strategic planning. In addition, Chairperson, our plan was also heeded to the president's call, which he made during the 2007 State of the Nation address, where he called upon government to, among others, intensify the fight against poverty, the issue of security of supply, and the expansion of access to electricity, the promotion and the growth of the small and medium business sector, and of course addressing the challenges of the second economy, the reduction of the cost of doing business in South Africa, and the enhancement of state investment in the third economy. So those are the principles that will underpin our strategic focus for this year. Over the next 2 years, we are going to indicate to this committee, Chairperson, how we plan to implement the minister's vision and explaining to the committee the plan, targets, and objectives of our various branches. Regarding security of supply, Chairperson, the same message has been echoed from both the private and the public sector that South Africa's energy demand is far outpacing available supply. Security of supply is still a key issue for government, and all key energy sources need to be investigated fully in order to guarantee security of supply. Fuel shortages and electricity blackouts of the past year indicated the need for South Africa to better plan for energy demand and provision. Energy is the lifeblood of every economy, but resource-based economies like South Africa just cannot continue to produce without cheap, reliable energy. For South Africa, security of energy supply is of paramount importance. It is only with appropriate planning that energy supply, now and in the future, can be secure. It is for that reason, therefore, that we have come up with the Integrated Energy Master Plan. The recent energy challenges have been experienced in the country, that have been experienced in the country, are an indication of a need to develop these integrated energy modeling systems, which will inform an integrated energy plan on an annual basis. To address these challenges, we have adopted a two-pronged strategy. Firstly, we will present an energy master plan that will incorporate a detailed energy infrastructure plan covering the next 5 years, including 2010, by June 2007. We hope to present this to Cabinet by June this year. In 2009, a modeling system to gather data will enable development of energy outlook for long-term planning. A long-term planning will be in place. This modeling system will allow for the plan to be updated annually to take account of any changes at both policy and technological front. We don't want to be caught with our pants down with regard to energy needs, both in the petroleum and in the electricity sector. We don't want to only realize that we have problems, we have infrastructure problems, only at a time when we have brownout and blackout. We must then be able to protect the growth path so that we can also align our infrastructure development with that kind of a growth path that would be projecting going forward. The current energy supply dynamics have driven home the need for improving energy efficiency, that is, efficiency in both the production and use of energy. Because we have been blessed with abundant energy sources in South Africa, it has been a habit of South Africans to waste power. And now, when we talk about security of supply, we must or not only focus our programs on the supply side. We also have to make it a point that we also focus our programs on the demand side, which is for that reason, therefore, that this year we'll be focusing, among other things, on energy efficiency in order to ensure that the energy that we have, we don't waste. In setting targets for energy efficiency for the country, it has also become abundantly clear that the international standards can never be achieved without the promotion of appropriate energy carriers for application. In this regard, greater focus is placed this year in the securing
and the promotion of gas, both natural and liquefied, as thermal storage. Because, as I said, that we have had abundant coal in our economy, we have largely depended on coal for production of electricity. 90% of our more than 90% of our we have to meet this technology that enables us to produce petroleum and coal. And for both petroleum and energy sector, there has been an over-reliance on coal. And that doesn't bode well for the petroleum supply, for guaranteeing petroleum supply. It is therefore important that as we go forward in terms of the development of our energy sector, we must be able to identify the level of energy carriers that will have to be included in our energy going forward before the energy. To support the renewable energy supply, energy planning, to support the renewable energy supply, energy planning and energy efficiency, we will be introducing a piece of legislation that will mandate provision of energy data and mandating the use of healthy, safe, energy efficient, and environmentally friendly energy appliances. Strengthening of education will create entities that will promote energy efficiency, renewable energy, energy planning, and environmental protection. The biofuel strategy will be published this year. The final strategy will take into account all stakeholder contacts received during the consultation process that took place at the beginning of the year. Introduction of biofuels is part of our response to climate change, This is but one of the many initiatives that are supported by our new community strategy program that commands the energy with the signing of the first of most of the renewable energy sources, the future is moving them to the ideas we have made on the project, have very long and most of these projects have also applied and have received our support for this project. We are going to be pushing ahead with advice by a lot more people in this market. Addressing energy poverty still remains a challenge for the society. Significant progress has been made within the implementation of the integrated national energy program. Challenges of poor and absence of infrastructure, especially in rural areas, have put a strain on the government. A total of 1.4 billion votes has been allocated in the 2004-2008 financial year for the electrification of 150,000 and all this can be built in for 10 substations. Because that, you recall that the kind of infrastructure that will be done in the end was an apartheid infrastructure. An infrastructure that was supposed to underpin a connection for the food in the Africa. This is a structure that sustains our program. But right now, it is becoming minimum, for example. Here is the number of connections that are being occasioned by the acceleration of the situation of the in terms of people's right to get this legal A part of the education plan going forward, we will prioritize food with the target of all things at the end of the financial year and all students at the end of the financial year. All students in the country, all students in the country. In terms of the local access to the Some of the questions we need to be whether we have enough capacity to hold our education to meet the between the core targets and to what extent we are able to influence as for the policy to deliver our goals. So honorable members of the members both as for the municipality have this responsibility We will finalize the concrete plan to make the final season of our program to make the target of the better as part of our objective, we will be evaluating the social economic impact of the integrated national strategy. A baseline study that commenced in 2007, which will allow them to establish the various impacts of the labor community. And one thing that has been a part of the need for us to boast of the number of connections that we have without addressing and addressing as to what impact that has made on the lives of the people that we need in the community. That it really improves the lives of the people, or, you know, it's just a thing that's big in terms of people that we have to go for the connected so many millions of people. In terms of the analysis of how or what extent that has changed the lives of the people. But the intention of all the The problem, for example, would be able to establish a correlation between education and would also be able to establish a correlation between healthcare and electrification, would be able to correlate electrification and enterprise development, as well as job creation, and all these as being outcomes of our education. The problems afflicting the distribution sector are acknowledged by all as being fragmentation of the use of the employment condition. This manifests itself in the blackouts and brownouts that are currently being experienced at the approaching. In 2010, we will focus on addressing this problem by advancing the rare creation process and by implementing the existing regulation. And I must say that we have completed the roadmap has already been finalized to establish the process of the parallel process.
The EBI restructuring deal will be presented to Parliament this year, providing the legislative framework for RED establishment. The biggest challenge for RED creation still remains the voluntary participation of the voluntary participation nature of the process due to constitutional constraints, which we are all aware of. Three basic electricity provision instead have been augmented by the promulgation of the three basic alternative energy policy to cover those qualifying households without access to grid electricity. In this way, the thermal needs of especially rural areas can be addressed without having to take them to make them wait for the grid infrastructure. The department's role is limited to providing the policy framework and supporting municipalities and ESCOM in the implementation of the policy. As you might be aware, Chair, the challenge exists of blanket covering even non-deserving households in the pre-basic electricity provision. Our policy framework provides for limited implementation of pre-basic electricity to qualifying households only. The debate on climate change and security of supply is not complete without a discussion on nuclear energy. If we are to deal decisively with the challenges of greenhouse gas emissions and to reduce our over-reliance on coal for power generation, we have to seriously consider nuclear energy as part of the solution. We are accelerating our work to ensure greater reliance on nuclear power generation. It is in this context that we are developing a nuclear energy policy and strategy that will respond to this challenge. The draft nuclear energy policy has already been submitted to Cabinet to enable consultation with other government departments. We are concomitantly addressing issues of nuclear fuel supply. The proposed program of uranium beneficiation is a response to this need. The development of a comprehensive nuclear energy industrial complex is inevitable given the envisaged scale of nuclear programs. A strategy for the development of steel required to support this program will be developed during the course of this year. Legislation emanating from the radioactive waste management policy and strategy will also be finalized during the course of this year. Licensing of petroleum activities started in earnest last year with over 12,500 applications received, mostly in the last week of the convention season, as it was the case even with the mining licenses. People wait until the last minute for them to apply for the concession of their licenses and then play the bureaucrats if things go wrong. Mostly in the last minute of the process of evaluation of applications has begun in earnest, and we are expecting to issue all licenses by the end of this financial year. Transformation of the petroleum industry still remains high on our agenda. The commencement of licensing under the Petroleum Products Amendment Act has given us leverage to begin to deal effectively with the promotion of transformation of liquid fuel sector. It has become clear to us, with the best of intentions, real change can only come with proper mandate, legal mandate. Addressing energy poverty still remains a challenge for the department. Although significant strides have been reached in the provision of electricity to the masses of our people who have previously been underserved or not served at all, there is clearly a need for thermal energy solutions. Some of the people, even when they have electricity, still use low-grade coal and paraffin for thermal needs. We have recognized that in most cases it is not the type of fuel per se that presents health, safety, and environmental challenges to households, but appliances that are being used with fuel. With the continued focus in correcting the prices of certain fuel types that are overpriced, we will pilot different energy appliances. The 2007 Energy Summit is planned to take place in June this year. The main objective of this summit is to engage stakeholders in reviewing the Energy White Paper of 1998 to assess the relevance of some of the policies in the context of the prevailing energy situation. With regard to mineral regulation, Chairperson, honorable members, we presented to you a plan on eradicating the backlog relating to the processing of mining applications last year. We had indicated at the time that backlogs would be eradicated by end of September 2006. Because of the negative perception these delays had caused among investors, and analysts. We embarked on an international roadshow targeting strategic mining investment countries such as Canada, USA, Switzerland, and the results were very positive indeed. We have and continue to challenge any company that would claim to have overdue applications to come forward so that we can address this. As part of to complete this part, gentlemen, I'd like to mention the fact that indeed, as we have promised, we did wipe out the backlog by September 2006. As part of monitoring compliance with the mining charter, both planned and unplanned inspections are conducted on a periodic basis in the mine. According to our strategic plan for this year, an average of 150 to 100 to 200 inspections per region are planned for 2007-2008 financial year to monitor the various compliance aspects. Because when people come and lodge the application, they are required to meet certain requirements. Which requirements then make it possible for us to give them those licenses. And fulfillment of those requirements, compliance with those requirements, therefore become the condition of the license. But because at some stage, and at some time, we don't go and monitor whether these things that these people said that they have complied with are indeed the case. You know, it normally happens that some of these things end up falling through the cracks. People say that I have, in my social plan, I have so many employees and so many projects. But because at times we were not going there to monitor and inspect the mines and see whether indeed these projects exist, people would easily cheat us. But now we'll be embarking upon a monitoring process. We'll continue to monitor the implementation of the social and labor plan as a tool to achieve objectives of the mining sector, ensuring that projects introduced by the industry are sustainable and contribute to the long-term economic empowerment of their communities. To firm up government approach to LED projects, a workshop is being organized for this month of May between the department and SALGA to set the minimum standards for accessible LED projects and to discourage the small-time monkey projects that sometimes companies submit for approval to the department, claiming that such projects have already received a blessing by a local or provincial government. Last year, the department, together with the DPSA, conducted an investigation into the capacity challenges of this department, with emphasis on the challenges brought about by the implementation of the MPRCA and the petroleum licensing process. Recommendations may include management training programs for the regional staff to ensure greater understanding of the requirements of the Act and improve efficiency, and creating an environment for the sharing of best practices. Training, workshops, and information sharing discussions are already planned and being implemented this very year. Through the number of officials in the branch, though the number of the of officials in the branch was increased last year, in the light of these Burindela recommendations, requests for additional personnel have been submitted to HR this last week and are under consideration. A directorate responsible for black economic empowerment has been created, and the appointment of the director is imminent. A plan and budget will be provided with MCEF period to secure the services of experts that will assist and train the BE directorate in evaluating the economic and financial models and BE deals in general. The Mineral Policy and Promotion Branch will continue with its promotional activities in the main, highlighting the investment potential for South Africa. Late last year, there were discussions that South African mining sector is not attracting any new investments during this commodity boom. In this regard, an all-stakeholder meeting is to be held shortly to finalize the commodity strategies, highlighting issues that need to be implemented for the industry to continue attracting investment. You'll recall, sir, that towards the end of last year, the department, together with the other stakeholders, the industry and the unions, embarked upon a process in terms of which they were to investigate what occasion this so-called drought of investment during this commodity boom. This meeting that we're talking about here, Chairperson, is the one now that is the culmination of that process. It's not that we're beginning now a new process. It's that same process now culminating into the presentation of the findings by the various task teams that were formed. However, it should be noted that the industry has already started seeing a number of new investments due to huge investments in the state. That the state has put in upgrading the infrastructure and the certainty in the outlook of the industry due to the way in which we currently process licenses. The minister in here by the Broadsea was updating you on the implementation program for the Precious Metals Act and the Diamond Mine Amendment Act of 2006. It suffices for me to say that we have completed all the preparatory work in this regard. Shortly, we will be presenting to you the long-awaited Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Amendment Bill. I might as well mention to you that these amendments are mainly of a technical nature and do not bring about any fundamental changes in the substance of the law. During the latter half of the financial year, we will also be bringing to you amendments to the Geoscience Council Act, which will seek to foster the alignment with the MPRCA Amendment Bill. The department will continue to contribute towards sustainable development through mining. This will be done by managing and administering the Committee of the Mineral and Mining Development Board that is responsible for sustainable development. Develop a strategy for rehabilitation of ownerless and derelict mines. Developing a strategy for the water ingress program in different mining areas. The strategic goal of mine health and safety inspectors would be to continue with their improvement in governing the mining industry to be healthier, cleaner, and safer. The overall trend in mining occupational related deaths has been decreasing. However, the numbers still remain far too high, and the burden of occupational illness and disease also remains a concern. To this end, Jefferson, the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate will ensure that all planned mine audits and inspections are carried out, ensuring compliance to the Mine Health and Safety Council's milestones of health and safety targets is one of the of this branch's primary goals. This will require that the restructuring process that is near completion is finalized to ensure stability and self-retention. The human resource development plan for the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate that has been developed is currently being implemented with the recruitment of inspectors in training. The internal restructuring of the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate is being carried out also to prepare the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate for integration with other inspection agencies as part of the National Integration for Occupational Health and Safety Competences. This is in terms of the cabinet decision that was taken way back in 1999. This year also heralds the Mine Health and Safety Council biennial summit to review the state of health and safety at mines as required in terms of Section 43 of the Mine Health and Safety Act of 1996. The tentative date for the Mine Health and Safety Council tripartite summit is the 5th of October 2007 in Johannesburg. Allied to the summit will be a mini Indaba on seismicity and rock depth, as requested by the Minister of Minerals and Energy in response to the increasing trend of accidents related to these agencies and further aggravated by the rock burst incident in October last year where 5 miners lost their lives at Tauduna gold mining accident. The tentative date for the mini Indaba is the 7th September 2007 in Kalgoorlie. The department has developed a database for derelict and owners mines and a ranking system to assist in the prioritization of those mines that need urgent attention. More than 30% of the identified mines are ownerless and therefore become government responsibility to close and rehabilitate in the interest of neighboring communities. As of 1st March this year, we introduced the corporate services branch within the department. Priorities for this branch will be skills development, building the department's corporate culture, turning DMA, DME into a learning organization, enhancing the observance and implementation of particular principles within the department. secure challenges in both the mining and energy sectors continue to pose serious challenges for the department. The department will be focusing on the implementation of the January cabinet report decision in relation to capacity building within the mining and petroleum licensing processes, as well as the implementation of the voluntary capacity outcomes. This will hopefully strengthen the capacity of the department to deliver on its mandate. An integrated human resource plan will also be developed to enable the department to meet its strategic human resource needs resulting from the strategic plan. Based on the aforementioned, the HR capacity of the core line function components within the department will be strengthened, and the human resource planning function will be repositioned and restructured in line with the new human resource framework for the public service, as issued by the Department of Public Service and Administration. Competency assessments will also be conducted for all employees. Leadership and departmental growth will also be embarked upon to ensure an increase of the skills pool. This will be complemented by the coaching and mentorship programs that the department already has in place. Over the MTF period, overall spending for the department is projected to grow from 2.6 billion in 2006-2007 to an estimated 4 billion in 2009-2010 at an average rate of 16%. Additional allocations for increasing the number of employees in the department to meet its statutory obligation in implementing new legislation and regulating the mining and energy sectors contribute to this increase in spending. 18 million, 22.4 million, and 24.8 million have been provided for unfunded proofs and administrative expenditure related to these unfunded proofs over the MTF. Other additional allocations over the same period have gone to the Integrated National Electrification Program, 285 million for electrification backlogs in schools and clinics, the Council for Geoscience got 50 million rand, and the Nuclear Energy Corporation of South Africa, 145.6 million, and the implementation of new transfer payments to diamond and precious metals regulators also contributes to the increase in transfer payments. Honorable members, I'm happy to report that in the previous financial year, approximately 70% of our goods and services budget was spent on VEs and SMEs. Over the MTF period, we project to increase our procurement spend to above 80% of the total goods and services budget. We'll be targeting mainly the areas of rehabilitation of ownerless and terrorist mines, as well as other technical services that are required by the department from time to time. To say that during the course of this of the 2007-2008 financial year, we will be tabling the EDI restructuring bill, the radioactive waste management agency bill, the energy bill, the mineral petroleum resources development amendment bill, the geoscience amendment bill, and of course, Jefferson will continue to develop ways and means of monitoring the state-owned enterprises and to ensure that their programs are aligned to the objectives of government. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG. I think one aspect which I suppose members are able to prepare for relate to specific allocation in the budget of the department where we will, as a way of starting discussion, interact with this overview by the Director General of the department. It has raised issues we think are of strategic importance for the entire portfolio. I'll give that to members. We will perhaps on the second page get into much more detailed areas we need to there has been processes of strategic planning. There has been suggestions across the board in terms of the portfolio. We will open that opportunity and to interact with some of the things which are raised here and others which are not raised. And thereafter, get into the specifics of the and how things have been allocated. We have you can lower your hand low. That's not set. Those that have the low conversion and the profit in that
sequence. If the I made sure this time that I am in time for this very important initiative. Unlike last year that I just missed it. And but I must say, Chairperson DG, I commend you on this. I don't want to go into the nitty-gritty of the figures that will sort it out. I'm sure your calculation is correct. I know that you are a very good man when it comes to mathematics. But I'm kind of a concerned, Chairperson. You know, in fact, you know, the dynamic has been pulled out of this department in terms of cleaner energy. The dynamic of that we respect has been missed the opportunity to get engaged on the CDMR. But now it is shipped to the public enterprise. And you see, that is the good in fact stimulate the debate on nuclear energy. But then maybe if you can just say to us, give us a brief progress report on that. Maybe you have overheard one of the DGs in the public enterprise say that progress is at that stage presently. Now that we are talking of nuclear energy and clean energy, I think it is important for us to talk about the PDMR, which of course is good. But also DG mentioned that all the clinics and all the schools, DG, how many clinics are there and how many schools are there? That is what we want to know. How many is still outstanding because of just a problem that you have with the infrastructure. It's obvious that there will be some who won't be rich during this term. Chairperson, I am very glad to see that the department has now come up with the EDI restructuring bill. That will in fact make it much more easier for us to engage with the local councillors and all stakeholders around the electrification issues. Chair, my last question is on the bill that the DG in fact mentioned. Did those bills, I'm the program convener, and my concern is that only minerals and petroleum research, resource development amendment bill, has made the deadline for now. Will the others make the deadline after June? If that is the case, then I'll be happy to then deal with those problems. But what is also important, Chairperson, it is the directorate that is established on BEV. You know, we used to cry on BEV. That is, in fact, we haven't come up very clear on the policy on BEV. Nowadays, you just hear that, hey, I'm a BEV partner, but I give for money. There's no income, nothing, there's no empowerment, nothing, there's no procurement, nothing. So I think this directorate on BEV is long overdue. It should have been done and been dealt with immediately when that scorecard was drawn up. This BEV directorate should have been there to guide the public and to assist the people with their BEV plan.
Thank you, Honorable Comrade.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, DJ, for the good report. But I have some questions. Every time when we come here, we're talking about security, electricity, security of fuel. And in the last 2 weeks, again, there's new stories in the newspaper. I know it's newspaper, like stories, but especially when it comes to security of fuel in 2010. They were supposed to build a new pipeline from Durban to Pretoria, and it cost about 4 billion rand, and now they want to upgrade it and make it a bigger pipeline. Now all of a sudden it costs 9 billion rand. Where is this money going to come from? And is this pipeline big enough? Because we will have a big shame on ourselves when we have to 2010 profit, and we didn't have enough in the country. And they were asking the same story, someone from Sato. I asked the same question about a month ago for Sato, and they couldn't really answer. They only said they will make sure, but I'm worried because last time when we asked this question for electricity, they said they will make sure there's enough electricity. I mean, the system was a hell of a problem about a year ago. And I don't want to say someone is lying, but someone is misinterpreting us. Something like that, because when it comes to electricity, someone is lying along the line. You know, you can't say lying, but someone is misleading us. And really, I want the department to really go there and look for the naughty ones and do a team of them, because there was about a week or two ago a newspaper article where the supply is very good when it comes to municipalities. The supply is good. And from the municipalities, but the infrastructure of the municipalities is in such a bad condition that any more question for more electricity, the whole system will collapse. And I mean, if you look just about 10 municipalities in the red area here, if all the municipalities is there, and it's a big municipality, it's not a case, it's a small one. So really, I want to ask you, maybe get a comment from the department. When you go to the mine, you have infrastructure around the mine. And is it not time that we are transporting the mine and the electricity power station using the railway transport? Shame. The department is building roads every day. And as far as they're building roads, as far as the mining company in the power station destroying the roads because they're traveling all these coal steam for road transport and definitely not to. And even when it comes to the transport of fuel, I mean, I'm saying the knowledge since I was a little boy, every the dribble of petrol was transporting from Durban from sea by train. Big petrol tanks is still standing up in the Kimberley over there. But now you find 20, 30 trucks a day running with this transport, up with this fuel. So I don't understand why was he still using the road transport. The wasting of electricity, we always put pointing the finger to the household who use a lot of electricity. But what are we doing to make sure that big companies and the mining and petrol companies reduce the use of power? Because we were visiting Natref and what's the other one? Natref. And I mean, it's easy for them. They have gas there.
why they can't put it on their own kind of small power station to create their own electricity? Something like that. When you come to the building of CBM, I think we must start seeing an option. Because we're using very, very valuable coal on this thing. This coal we can use to produce more petrol fuel in the country. We use it now for creating very, very cheap electricity. And on the end of the day, all the coal will be gone, and we will not have enough oil in the country. Lastly, Beijing. We are in this country, everyone is talking about climate change. And the first thing when people of climate change open their mouth, they say that households must save money, must save water, and the farmers must save water. But what about mining? Mining is the biggest waste of water. And I think really we must just get a little bit more stronger on this. Also, because of that foundation, now the last one. This licensing of petroleum, we're talking about 12,500. I'm also a farmer, but I never received anything about I must license my tank on the farm. And my worry is about it. I know about it. But there's about 40,000 farmers in this country. All of them are not licensed. Because I don't see them in the problem.
Thank you.
else you need to come.
International interest is the big thing. And I have not seen that before. What we have to do is we don't have to look at the size of the budget in isolation from the activities that were performed in relation to those goals. Because if you the what we have to do is when you budget, you can look at your own budget. Can you then be able to see on all those activities that you want to manage in the year, you have all the capacity that you have. But it would be useless for us to increase the energy budget when we know that we don't have that capacity to deliver on those things. It is for that reason, therefore, that we embark upon a strategic planning that will align our activities with that. Because that has been happening in the past. That's why you find that some departments understand it. It's because, you know, they would feel that that is small relative to 28. You know, without taking into consideration all the factors that we need to take into consideration in order to determine whether we're able to scale that particular kind of problem. So, what I want to assure the honorable members is that all those figures were functional. In relation to the activities that we have to carry out in respect of the area and in relation to the capacity that we have in the area. But at the end of the day, yes, high budget and we cannot tell you. The number of members are in here, what do you mean? Is that I understand? That's the reason why this is so far, the CDM are a concern. I'll Honorable Law and the Pro, simultaneously, on the CDM are. So far, as I'm aware, the CDM are currently finalizing the state of what was submitted to the nuclear regulator. So until then, I'm not in a position to comment any further, because this is a development project which is under DPE. So I think they are the most appropriate department to respond on that. And as to the PBMR and the nuclear program in South Africa, we don't necessarily, the nuclear build program doesn't necessarily hinge on the PBMR, because we are now talking of building conventional nuclear stations, not necessarily the PBMR. For power generation, therefore, we'll be building conventional power stations, not necessarily the PBMR. So whatever happens with PBMR will not affect the nuclear expansion program that we have. Coming back to the issue of uranium, I think
We have been, I must say that in terms of policy, the government has always been taking the position that says that we shall not exclude nuclear from our energy mix. We didn't indicate to what level we would then have nuclear in our energy mix. Indeed, up to now, we have not yet said that that would be the case. But the reality is that most of the countries of the world who had suspended years ago their nuclear program are beginning now to resume that nuclear program. And that manifests itself in the number of applications that we get in the department from people who are applying for prospective candidates for uranium. And therefore the risk that we as South Africans run is for us to keep on giving these rights to all these companies so that we can allow those countries outside there to stockpile this uranium, you know, at our own disadvantage. You know, so that's what we are trying to address in our policy. We are trying to say that now that we have an advantage of having uranium in abundance in South Africa, and now there is this resurgence of nuclear activities around the world. What is it that we can do as a country so that, you know, we can take advantage of that situation? You see, so that's what we're trying to do. That's what we're trying to say about uranium. And indeed, and Prof asked about the level. Definitely, there is no way that we can have a highly enriched uranium. Except that we converted the safari into a low enriched uranium, what we call, means that we no longer intend going to that. So that's the position. And by the way, we are the signatory, were the staunch and ardent supporters of the NPT. There is no way that we can do anything that will go in violation of the principles that underlie that agreement. That's the country. The number of schools, how many? 8,800 schools. These, by the way, include those that are without roofs and those not fit for electrification, this 8,800. We have 341 clinics. So we will do all clinics in 2007-2008 financial year. Schools will do them over 2007, 2008, 2009, and 2010, as in 2010. So this 8,800 will be done in 2010. Excuse me. The other question, pipeline, and you know, this is one of the problems that we have. We have said now and again, has to be resolved insofar as the petroleum situation is concerned. You have an economic hub of the country located in land. And you have refineries typically located along the coast. You have ports naturally located along the coast. Now, what is therefore important here is that linkage between the coast and inland, which is an economic hub of the country. In other countries, the economic hub is along the coast, so it is. So the problems of infrastructure are not being encountered to the extent that we encounter them in South Africa. So it is for that reason, therefore, that even if you can have sufficient refining capacity in South Africa, If you don't have the infrastructure that will enable you to bring the product from inland, from the coast to inland, you still have that kind of problem. So bear in mind that your inland is your economic hub. And again, if you have your port, where these ships that bring products, if you go the importing route, if you have your port where they are, you know, you still need to link this. So that's why it's therefore important that we have to build this pipeline that will enable us to bring the product, be it crude or finished product, from the coast to inland. So that's why we would therefore appreciate if whoever will build the pipeline will build a pipeline with a capacity that will enable us to meet those problems. So as to where the money will come from, of course, the government this year has made an announcement that we need the power leaders need to invest in the building of infrastructure in this country. And we would expect the finance to deal with that. Chairperson, can I allow my colleagues to respond to other questions? Will you excuse me, Chairperson? Thank you.
Sorry, honourable members, we had to excuse the duty for a while. So we'll take a 10-minute break so that the members can arrange, the team can arrange their responses before we take other questions. Can you just
No, Whatever is that, you know the meaning of the meaning of the meaning of the It's a problem. But not, what they want to do is that time that there's someone that they go into it from the life. So they have actually about the
expecting
problem you want that every issue is setting material. I put my back against the that means that
will make him reap sufficient profit out of that. But if the country at some stage decides that we need to encourage more use of rail than road, I think they can do that. They can provide certain incentives for those who use rail, or they can use certain kicks to keep those who use rope. But unfortunately, it's something that is totally outside our domain. We are commenting on that. No, we support that. That's why we're creating. We support that. Those that I didn't propose to share is because those are the sentiments that we share with an honorable member. So that's why I didn't want to support you.
I don't know. Maybe I wasn't. My mind was not very busy. I don't know whether the licensing one, if DG has answered it, and I don't know if it answered. Petroleum license, the farmer, yes, the farmer. The one that was asked by the honorable farmer. You know, if we were purely technical about this, we would argue and say that the ignorance of the law is no excuse. And if you are in petroleum business, you must familiarize yourself with all the policies, with all the laws that pertain to that, it becomes your business. Your business is not only to go and collect profit. It's for you to continuously make assessment of the environment, and that environment includes policies, it includes the change in laws and all that. But we are aware of the fact that we are dealing with people who hitherto were not involved in the mainstream of the economy, and who therefore need assistance, and therefore we go all the way. Which is for that reason that we conduct workshops in all the provinces. We go to all the provinces. The petroleum, this license in Quatico, we went to all the provinces where we were conducting some of them. Yeah. Even now we're still conducting some of those workshops. So now, if now that person will miss the law, will miss the workshop, which is supposed to assist him. I mean that's all that we can do with it. I mean, we can go on the sofa. Because that's the only way in which we're trying to do. But we'll try also to keep on publicizing. We published it in the papers. At times they may not be reading those. Yeah. But why are they in business? I don't know. Yeah. Talking about that ordinary consumers, chairperson, I would appreciate that. I would understand. You know, because as a consumer, all what we have to do is an ordinary customer. I mean, you have to get services from the government. But if you are a business person, you create income out of this environment, which is made up of the laws and the policies, and so is your source of livelihood. You have to familiarize yourself.
Thank you so much. Are there any more questions? Honorable Jenny? And
Honorable Chair, there are two questions. The first one on the President's State of the Nation, and I'm sure this links up with this and so on. It was very clear that though the economy is growing, the one bottleneck that we still face in the growth of the economy is the infrastructural development. We need to beef up our infrastructure. And one of the issues, among others, was harbors, electricity. Lots of electricity when you melt it, wrong it, to them, converting it into
capital and consumer goods. That takes in the heavy industry that you go to create, that needs a lot of electricity. We are giving an example that in a normal power station, residential consumption would only be 5%, the rest is going to heavy industry. So a power station would actually have to supply so much in heavy industry as compared to residential because of the concentrated heat that we have. Now we also saw that to beef up our electrical power station supply, the one power station that we need to build will take seven years. Now what I'm asking is that because this is such a critical thing, the infrastructural development to our economy, to the social problems that are there of unemployment, crime and so on. Can you give us an assessment in your report? It didn't come out clear as something that you have concentrated on. But because it is so critical, can you give us an idea how far we are, how long it is going to take to build the necessary power station to keep up the infrastructure that is needed for our economy to grow beyond 6%? That's the first question. The second quick one, you spoke about free electricity supply for the indigenous. In my experience, this has been a problem because we've been writing off debt in the previously disadvantaged areas like township. This is specifically because there are so many people who truly can't afford because of unemployment. But the big problem is what methods, mechanisms are we using to check who can afford, who is a genuine case, who's a deserving case, and who's not a deserving case. Because in the township, social workers have said they are employed to go out and check per capita income. By the country, just take for working, for example, they'll tell you we can't go, you need more social workers. A local government can't employ enough social workers, and they haven't employed enough social workers to check that. So I'm just saying, all over the country, even in rural areas, what mechanisms are we using, especially given the casual labor that is there. You know, someone is employed for 3 months, is normal employed. So if your assessment was that you can afford, you can only afford, and you're able to update your system with so many millions of people who are on and off jobs throughout the lifetime. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, the DG made a very important statement that we cannot decide the mode of transport, or this department cannot decide the mode of transport that consumers choose and what effect that has on supply and demand of all manner of things, whether it be petroleum or road vehicles or electricity for rail, etc. I think the important thing is though that we have committed as a country to things like the Kyoto Protocol and all sorts of things that leave us with the responsibility of meeting certain emissions demands. And that we now have the cleaner development mechanism approach, and projects are being applied in terms of the cleaner development mechanism to credit, so that we can earn those credits out there by biofuels. It's one of the means to earn those credits. Nuclear, as opposed to coal fired power stations, could be a means to keep our emissions targets low, or as low as it is right now, and have earned more credits that way. But I don't think there's enough clarity on how these cleaner development mechanisms work, and I do think that it is a Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, of their core business. The TSE has major contributions to make to how much emissions are put out there by the energy mix that we promote. So for example, in the presentation, or the note on the presentation about the DG, on page 5, under the heading biofuel strategies, that there are certain CDM projects that are being supported by the department. I'm assuming that Environmental Affairs and Tourism might approve those projects with CDM. Okay, that is where I'm confused. My understanding of it has been that CDM projects have been applied for to the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. Okay. Now, that leads me to the question about the energy mix. Because it's all a debate out there, and it's not a debate that's been concluded. We're trying to prove that biofuels may generate more carbon with the cutting down of whatever bio products, for example, forestry and trees, give off more carbon dioxide once they cut than the fuel that is produced from the material of it. And I wanted to know whether there was much research that has gone into that from the department side, or is it waiting on research to be concluded by other institutions? That's the one thing. And the second thing is the trading mechanism for carbon credits. What does that look like at this point in time? How can new entrants, as the DG points out in the presentation, enter that market, generating new carbon credits? Trading it either internally or externally. How does that trading mechanism work exactly?
Thank you,
Honorable.
Looking at the commitment of the schools and clinics, are we not over-committing ourselves? I just want to know. Because projects are growing, houses are being built every day, and they need electricity. So by saying by 2010 we will eradicate or have electrified every clinic or school, are we not over-committing ourselves?
Can you
tell
me how much? I think let me allow so that they are being here when the on electricity,
in the funding framework that we work under, what will happen is that we will just prioritize certain things over us. So essentially what will happen is that you less households, but then focus more on things because we need that. Coming to the next question on three basic energy generally, and how we qualified. Just to reiterate what the director general has said, our mandate relates to providing a quality service. In fact, in 2003, the DME embarked on a study to determine what is the best way of targeting the people who qualify as opposed to And through that study, it was determined that the so-called technical targeting methodology is the best way to go. I don't want to go into the technical detail, but essentially what it means is that you target qualifying households on the basis of their behavioral pattern. In other words, the
poor behave in a particular way when it comes to energy consumption relative to rich people. And that way you will be able to can determine how to access them, as opposed to using some other dynamic methods like indigenous policy and so on, because they tend to be more administratively bad in some. So once we have determined that technical approach to targeting, our policy framework spells it out very clearly as to how targeting must happen. But unfortunately, it is the prerogative of the municipality to determine who gets and who does not get. And unfortunately, you know what has happened is that everybody gets, even though they're not qualified. We are working in collaboration with our government departments in order to highlight better ways of targeting, especially in the context that we have now promulgated the three basic alternative energy policy, which complements some of the challenges that have been raised by municipalities about lack of infrastructure. Then the last question, Chair, relates to the new power station requirement, how to meet that growing demand, when we're going to roll that out. And again, I want to reiterate the Director General's earlier answer to this question is that our approach can be categorized in terms of supply side options and demand side options. So as the demand grows, we will meet that requirement, not only by providing more and more power, but by also intervening on the demand side. And he's already the Director General, efficiency is one of those demand side interventions. But there's also the issue of DFN, the so-called DFN, in other words, where we intervene on geyser controls and so on in order to make sure that at certain times we are able to meet the peak in demand. In terms of the supply side intervention in more detail, is that we are building power stations. In fact, as we speak, there is an additional 2,000 megawatts of peaking plants that will be commissioned this year in Mossel Bay and in Atlantis. In fact, I believe that the one is already operational, ready for the winter of this year. And then, yes, the honorable member is correct. It takes about 5 to 7 years, including the environmental permitting processes, before power station can be commissioned. But most of those processes are already in place. And in fact, as we speak, the one baseload, so-called baseload power station, will be built in the Lepalane waterbed area of Limpopo, and it would be operational by about 2011, ready for meeting the demand at the time, which is when we anticipate that the demand, or the demand would have increased at the rate of and so on. In other words, beyond 2011, we also anticipate that there will be new power station requirements, and therefore, as we speak, there are plans with a 20-year horizon to meet that demand accordingly. And we can provide the so-called National Integrated Resource Plan, which provides the details as to how we will see that demand going forward. Yeah, I think that covers
Thanks, Jefferson. I think I'd like to feed off from the last comments raised by my colleague around the planning issue. There's a question which was raised around the energy mix. That whether the department is looking at different energy mixes. And the answer to that is clearly yes. And it is clearly about finding a solution, just not just successfully for environmental consideration, but a solution, an energy solution for South Africa, which serves, as it says, for sustainable development, which is about economic growth, it's about poverty alleviation, it's about climate change mitigation. It should not just be an energy mix which is intended to solve one problem. So the energy mix that we're looking at, therefore, has got aspects which are looking at the price of the energy, its volume, how much it can go into the, for instance, how much electricity can be produced, the quality. quality of that, because some of the energy mixes, like wind doesn't always blow. It's fairly intimate, so you need to find a way of filling the gap. So it raises issues around quality, flexibility. For instance, there might be issues around the high demand around certain times of the day. So you need to be able to have flexibility in your energy supply to be able to meet the demand. So in respect of energy mix, we are not just considering one form, it's a whole lot of them, but clearly all of them have to make economic sense. And it comes back to the question which was raised about beneficiation. But beneficiation means we cost should have, with most of those beneficiated products, a large component of the cost of the energy. There's a time when the cost of beneficiation, where the cost of energy would not justify turning rock chrome into chrome and into charged chrome or something like that. So you need to be able to take account of your own economy when one is looking at the energy mix. The other question that you used, I'm gonna finish with the question on how the actual CDM was. But the other question that was asked was the question around power fuel, whether it may generate more carbon, whether department is doing any research itself. At this stage, clearly as a department, we just started a research institute called South African National Research Institute, SANERI, which is jointly funded or jointly managed by self, and DFT, Department of Science and Technology. It will involve itself in research of such issues. But it's something we are, of course, monitoring all the global communication in this regard. But from the last meeting we attended, it is clear that the issue with biofuels is that even though when you burn biofuels, you still produce CO2, it's supposed to be carbon neutral, in that in manufacturing biofuels, you absorb carbon from air, and yes, you burn it back. But there is clearly a limit to all of that. And the question is, where does that limit lie? And those are the kinds of questions that the power fuel strategy is to answer. And it's not just a problem in South Africa, but it's a global question. So I'm hoping that question is answered. The third one is, how does trading in carbon credits work? It is a very complex trade. It's not as simple, and the value of the carbon trade depends on what you most likely hear is that with the Kyoto Protocol, there are commitments up to 2012. And the question is, will there be commitments in terms of global gases, global warming gases reduction beyond 2012? And unfortunately, that's why the current discussions which are happening in Bonn, people are trying to answer the question, will there be further commitments? If there are no further commitments, the value of the carbon trade is limited. However, if there are going to be carbon trade, there could be carbon commitments beyond 2012, it creates a value for the carbon. That if I'm taking carbon out of the air, someone must be prepared to pay for the carbon. And unfortunately, it's always the developed countries that are buying the carbon, but the investment is supposed to be made in the developing countries. But the challenge with the trade is that there is the physical trade in someone investing in a plant which produces electricity while producing carbon. But then there is also the trading which will happen closer to the commitment period. That's where the challenge is. That the value of the trade in carbon, in the actual trade in carbon, is much lower than the value what is called the derivative. So that's where the challenge with the CDM is, and therefore causes problems in developing countries in understanding how to best get value from CDM trading. Thank you.
The chairperson, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the department for coming and all the members. And 4:44 at 10:00. And lunch today is at 12:45. It's older than we are. Come to the meeting.